This is Kelly Lally, and I'm here in Union Lake, Kentucky with Mr. Georgie Childress. Today is August the 6th, 1987. When were you born, Mr. Childress?
October 14th, 1919.
And where did you grow up?
Here in Edmondson County. Back at that time, our post office was Straw, Kentucky, S-T-R-A-W. And that's where I grew up to be a young man, in the forks of Nolin and Green River, about 12 or 14 miles north of Brownsville. And our address was Straw, Kentucky until years later. Then it was changed to Mammoth Cave, Kentucky, which still is.
What did your family do for a living, Mr. Childress?
Did then?
Uh-huh.
Farm. Raised on a farm.
How many children were you in your family?
12.
Wow, where did you fall in that number?
I'm the oldest boy. I have a sister older than I, and I'm the oldest boy. I have, there's four boys, eight boys and four girls, and I'm the oldest boy.
What were times like for your family during the Depression?
Oh, hard. This gets down to the grassroots of things. Times were hard. My brother next to me and my father, we would go to a lot of times in the summer during the Depression, and we'd get us a sack of peas, each of us, all three, and we'd go into these hollers and we'd dig wild ginger and mayapple roots and bring them home, wash them and dry them, carry them about, I'd say 2 mile to a dealer here in this community, and we'd sell them in exchange to buy bread. It was hard, times were hard, but there was no jobs. Finally, WPA, under President Roosevelt, came in this community, and my father got a job at that, which relieved some of the heartaches and hardships. And back in that time too, if you raised a crop of tobacco, you didn't get anything out of it to amount to anything at all. And I haven't heard my daddy say that he'd ship his tobacco to Louisville back at that time, and they'd send him a dun to pay the floor expense. It wouldn't bring anything, you know, and it went over the floor, and it didn't bring enough to pay the floor expense, and they'd send him a bill to pay the expenses. The times were hard. During the fall of the year, people has gotten away from this now. We were to have a local mill, a grist mill, to grind corn, to make cornbread. And a lot of times we wouldn't have enough corn to last until the next season, hard corn, of course. And my mother would make a gritter. A lot of people, I don't know what I'm talking about now, but you take a piece of metal and take a nail and a hammer and lay it on a board and drive it full of holes. And then you bend this piece and tack it on each side of a board and bend it upwards and let the rough part stick up. And you take an ear of corn and scrub it back and forth over that, and it would get this corn off, and it would fall through, in other words, mm-hmm. on the inside and then into a tray or a bowl. And they'd make bread out of that, and that was so good.
How did you hear about the CCC, Mr. Children?
Well, the CCC, I don't really know how I came to hear about it. I guess through Merchant. It seemed to me like my father came in one day and told me that, told my mother, that they was going to take all the young boys and send them off to CCC camp to work. And my mother cried. She didn't want me to have to go. She didn't know it was voluntarily at that time. But it went on in a little bit, and I wasn't old enough to go. So a lady came to the store, Mr. J.T. Sanders, run the store and post office at Straw. And I heard she's going to be there that day to interview some boys and take some names to go to the CCC camp. And so I went up and upped my age And lo and behold, they taken me. And just a day or two, I got a notice to appear over to Mammoth Cave at number 2 camp for examination. And I went over there and was examined and then shipped on to Fort Knox. And from Fort Knox, I stayed a few days in Fort Knox on to Henryville, Utah, where I spent 6 months and then returned home.
So how old were you really when you went into the CCC?
15.
15?
Mm-hmm. I made it 16.
Uh-huh. And 16, they even accepted you at 16? So first you went into Utah.
Mm-hmm.
What did you do while you were out in Utah?
Well, for a while we built trails for the sheep herders and the cattle drives. They had to have trails over these mountains, and we'd take shovels and hoes and spades, what have you, and dig a dirt trail around these mountains, gradually go up, and then when you get to the top, you'd gradually go down around these mountains for the cattle to make a shortcut through the mountains to be transferred from one place to another. And then we would, if they found a spring, you know, where water out there, the lye where it was alkali dirt, and water wouldn't run anywhere. It just come out of the ground and sink. And so if they found a spring or any amount of water, why, we would go to the forest and cut down a large pine tree and cut a log of, say, 12 or 15 feet long, and we'd flatten that about a third, hew it down to about a third, take about a third of it off, and then we'd take foot adz, which was an axe in one sense of word, a thing that chopped out chips, and we would chop a holler, make a trough out of this log, and we'd place one on the ground for sheep, and leave a space between it and the next and for cattle, and then put a third on top for horses. In some cases, it would be 9 troughs, one empty out into the other, for this preserving this water for cattle to drink when the drive would come through, because water was so scarce that very seldom was a place for the cattle to drink. And we did that, and then we did a lot of erosion work. We're in those canyons out there. They just come down to a narrow space in the bottom. And occasionally when a big snow would come, there would be a little runoff. And sometimes it'd get down and it would have a terrible washout in these flat places, and we'd dig a trench across this flat space and set a line of cedar post where it couldn't go back in this place, and that would gradually fill up. We worked horses to pull these poles out of the woods, and it wasn't very thick to start with. Cedar out in on the prairie and was short stuff. In the canyons in the forest, where it was tall, and we built telephone lines into the place, built some roads, kept busy. And we'd had a lot of fun, us boys did. I had never saw a porcupine. One day while we was cutting the right-of-way for a telephone line, a tree was out of the right-of-way, but we had saw some drappings on the ground during the snow, and I told one of my buddies, I said, "There's something up that tree." So we got to looking, and there's a porcupine up the tree. We ate our dinner real quick and got our axe apiece, and we went back and we cut this tree down to get this porcupine. And so I got me a little matchbox, a penny matchbox. Back at that time, I pulled the quills out of it and got me a matchbox full of quills and brought them in. It was something unusual. I never had seen one. It was an experience, a real good experience, going out there and seeing the country and doing the work. But I was young. I got homesick. I got homesick. And when my time was up in 6 months, I came home. And I stayed about 3 or 4 months out, and I re-enlisted and went back and spent the rest of my time over here at Mammoth Cave in the CCC camp. And over there, I did different work. We went in the woods and got down all the dead brush, beat it down, let it lay flat on the ground, and we would lay it on the contour of the hill, you know. And then from that, I went to the fire tower. I was fire guard. And on my off days, when it was in the week time, my buddies, I would go to the Mammoth Cave and go in there and stay all day with them. They policed up done police work in there, picked up trash and stuff, and I'd go in there and stay all day some days with them, just be in Mammoth Cave and having nothing else to do. And it's about 10 or 12 mile, and a lot of weekend I'd have to walk all the way from there to home and then start back walking, and occasionally somebody come along and pick me up. You didn't make no money, you didn't have no money, you just made $1 a day, and $25 that was sent home, and you only had $5, and if your parents were poor, it took just about all of that, you know, for them to live. But they would save me a little money occasionally, and that's what it was. That was the purpose of it anyhow, to send the money home to the parents. But some parents didn't need it, and they saved it for their boys, which was good, and they could buy an automobile and have a good time, but not me. We was really poor.
So what year did you begin your work in the camps at the CCC camps at Mammoth Cave?
1936. 1936, and I was in there during that flood in 37 in Louisville when the big flood came. And I had an experience while I was over there in the CCC camp. We was at Joppe, number 3, where I first went to. In later years, it disbanded and all the members moved to other camps, and then I went to number 2 camp. But in the meantime, while I was at number 3 camp at Joppe, we had this. I was on fire patrol, on fire guard, and another friend of mine was on fire guard, named Billy Kersey. And the fire tower was from where we were located, the camp was located, was west towards Brownsville, and was called Brooks Knob Fire Tower. And we were up there, and all the buildings, when the park had taken all the land, they tore all the buildings down, of course. And right down below this fire tower, my friend was on fire guard one night, and some folks came along and told him if he heard a noise to be sure, they used other words, that he didn't open his mouth. And after a while, he could hear them removing the roof off of this. There was a barn down beside the road, and he could hear these men removing this roof, this metal roof off this barn. So he reported it, and the barn run with the road, one side to the road and the other on the offside, and they'd taken the roof off away from the road where you couldn't see it from the road, but he could hear him and he reported. And at that time, at Mammoth Cave, the superintendent of Mammoth Cave was Mr. Holland. And the two rangers was Ranger Ridge and Ranger Wells. And we went the next morning. My barracks was on duty, and we were called to go. They had found this roofing where this man had put it up in his barn loft, and my barracks was on duty that week, and they called us late one afternoon, told us we were going to gather this roofing, get some proof where this roofing had been. They'd found it, and this fella had stole off the park. So a boy by the name of Miller and myself climbed up in the second story of this barn and had this roof out at the back. And we brought it home, brought it to the camp that night. But meantime, while we were there with the U.S. Marshal and Mr. Holland, they came and got this man, taking him to Bowling Green. And that was a great relief, but we were scared when we was up in this barn handing this roof out, you know, and it was a private place. We didn't know what they might get shot. And we brought that back to camp, and the next morning we were detailed to go back out to this barn and take the roofing that came off the end, place these pieces up there, and take nails and see if the nail holes would match in the sheeting that had come off of where they were pulled out. And when we'd lay it up there, the nails would go right on through the roof and through the sheet, and see, and we were up on that, and they'd taken pictures of us up on the barn. And meanwhile, down below was a house that the people lived in, and nobody didn't come out of that house for a while, but after a while, Mr. Holland come with a big 44 or 45 pistol, And we were just setting ducks up on this barn, us boys, you know, and it was scary. We could have got killed. And when this superintendent came with his gun, why, we saw some folks go out of this house and go off over the hill. But that night when they come to hunt to find this roofing, they heard this car coming. They just kicked their truck out of gear and it rolled off over the hill in behind the plum thicket and hid. But the next morning they found it and they got the roofing. They found where the roofing was and it was up in this barn. And we got it and then we had to go to Bowling Green. I have a summons in there where I was summoned to go to federal court on this. And that was one experience, you know, that stands out in one sense of the word more than any of the rest because we were in danger. We could have got hurt.
Yeah, I talked to Vernon Wells a couple of weeks ago, and he was telling me very similar stories.
Did he tell about him getting shot?
Yes, he did.
Oh, he almost got killed.
That's what he said.
Oh, he almost got killed. I didn't know he was still alive.
Yeah, he lives in Erlanger, up around Cincinnati. I'll give you his address before if you like it.
Ridge and Wells were the two rangers.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, got killed. He got shot. And the man that shot him is dead.
Yeah, I heard about that. Well, you say you worked in the fire tower and also cleaning out some brush. Did mm-hmm. you do any other work?
Yes. Later on, we helped tire this. When we moved from Joppy to New Entrance, which was number 2 at Mammoth Cave, at the beginning at 1, 2, 3, 4, 4 camps over there. The colored were in number 1, the white were in number 2 and 3 and 4, and number 4 was over in the Good Springs community. And number 3 was over across the river from north from, it'd be south from here. At Joppy, number 3 was, and number 2 was at the new entrance of Mammoth Cave at that time, what they called a new entrance. And when number 3 disbanded, why, I was on guard over there for a long time to keep anybody from coming vandalizing the buildings and getting anything. And then when they decided to move everything out and tear it down, why, I helped tear it down and dig up some the water lines, which was iron or galvanized pipe at that time. And from that, then when got ready for me to, I'd say 6 months before I left, we were building a road, which was labor, a lot of it just hand labor, from the main Mammoth Cave road down to the new ferry at Mammoth Cave. And they didn't hardly have the road done when they passed the law. If it had been in so long, you had to get out. And
mm-hmm.
So that's whenever I come out. We didn't hardly get the road done down to the ferry, and I left CCC camp. Didn't try to go back in anymore.
And what year was that you ended up leaving?
1938.
And also, did I hear you say that you worked with the men from Camp Number 1?
Mm-hmm.
The rock
pressure? Oh, yes, yeah. At a certain time, the Number 1 camp, finally, they, I don't know how coming to, moved the white boys out and put the colored in the rock quarry. And when they did that, then I got the job of taking care of the rock crusher, keeping it greased and changing oil in the motor, keeping gasoline in and the air compressor. And then I was the dynamite man. Sometimes I would load a charge too heavy and no experience, you know. And I remember one time I put a charge off and I loaded the top one too heavy and it blew a great big rock and went up in the air and come down and hit the building where the motor that pulled the rock crusher, it hit the top of that, went through the roof right down by the engine. It didn't hit it, but it went all the way through.
You were lucky, weren't you?
Yeah. Yeah. We built roads. All over the park area and kept up the roads, the gravel, which was gravel, of course, wasn't it, blacktop at that time. It was a help to the community, I'd say. We had to watch and we'd be on fire detail. And a lot of times it'd take you a long time to put out these fires where people had deliberately set. They didn't like it because they bought them out and they had fireflies. They'd ride mules and set fires. on one hill, ride on across and set on another and just keep going, you know. And you'd have to fight for it sometime for days.
Let's see. Well, how much free time did you have total?
I just had 2 days a week. Mm-hmm. And when we were detailed, a certain barracks, a barracks is a place of that houses so many men. And every week, one barracks would be on duty, in other words, for like fire or whatever the case might be. And when we were on duty, there'd be so many detailed out of that barracks to go to the kitchen, wash dishes, pots and pans, in other words, mm-hmm. or night watch. Somebody have to night watch it. I'd usually night watch because I never did like for my hands to be down in that grease. And those pots and pans, they have peeled spuds. Over that whole weekend, you know, because the cooks and the helpers would get a leave, and we'd have to substitute, take over while he's going. Wouldn't be very many in the camp over the weekend on just that one barracks, mostly.
Mm-hmm. Well, what did you do with your free time when you weren't on that work?
I'd come home, probably, and most time I'd go to church on weekends or be running around, walking around of a night, going somewhere. I never was no hand to, I didn't go anywhere much. I was a homeboy. I didn't venture out very much. I was too backward. And I'd go to church, which is right here where I live now, in my community. At age 13, I got saved at an old time church. And that's where I joined and still a member. I'd come home when we were church on that weekend. In this country, back at that time, you just have church once a month, mm-hmm. on Saturday and then Sunday. And then the rest of the time you had 3 weekends, it was free to go somewhere else. And when I was home, I'd go to church for my free time. And when I wasn't, I'd stay at home or visit my neighbors, something like that.
To what extent did you participate in any of the organized recreation or education programs at the camps? I know they had baseball teams and things like that. Did you participate in
that? No, I did not. I'd watch them. Mm-hmm. I'd go to the games and watch, but I got hurt when I went to school. We'd play baseball. Baseball was a favorite game of mine, and that's a favorite sport, and I still love it. But we didn't have no catcher's mitt, and I had to catch, and I got my fingers stove up, and I didn't want to play with them. They could throw that ball hard, and of course we had to make our balls that we had, you know. I would gravel out an old sock top and get a little piece of rubber and put inside of that and wind it up and sew it and make a ball. Anything to have a good time.
Did you participate in any of the education programs at the camp?
No, I don't believe I did. I might have at Joppy. Seems to me it's been so long, and I had surgery a year ago, and it's done something to my memory. I can't put things together sometimes like I ought to. But we had an educational advisor, Mr. Robinson, and it seems to me that I did participate some in my nights that I'd be at the camp after supper or lunch, we'd go to education. I'm sure I did. I can remember something, a little something about it. We had a recreation hall and we'd gather and he would, I'm sure now that was, I did, because I can remember seeing him. And he would talk to us and explain things to us.
What other things did you do at night after your work?
Well, me and the boys, sometime we'd play little games in the barracks. Occasionally, the trucks would load us up and take us to Cave City to see a movie. Mm-hmm. And a movie, it only cost us 10 cents back at that time to go in and see a movie. If you had 10 cents and the truck was going, well, you could go and ride free and see a movie. About all the ones we were interested in was them cowboy shows back at that time.
Yeah.
It was a great experience, and it didn't make no, oh, I don't know what to say hardly, it didn't make no great thing out of me, only I've got an experience to look back to of some things, you know. Mm-hmm. It was a good thing back at that time for the boys. I was in camp with boys from all over the state of Kentucky and some from Ohio and Indiana. And some of them were mean. Mean.
Did the boys play many pranks on each other?
Yes, they did.
Do you remember any of them?
Well, yes. When a new one would come in, they'd pick on him, you know. One time in particular. Now, I didn't get to stay over here at Mammoth Cave. Now, we were all new where I went when I went to Utah, and then I was used to it when I come back. I stayed 6 months, and I knew what to expect. So when they tell me something, I just, so-and-so is needing me, well, I just go on about my business, and they'd soon forget it because they'd find out I'd been in before. But when I went in over here to Mammoth Cave, at number two entrance, this and you boys come in, and they wouldn't, the officers wouldn't have let it happen if they'd known it, but they had one old boy to go out there at the Mammoth Cave, the number two Mammoth Cave Hotel, and the flag, they had a flag, American flag, you know, and they had him to go out there and stand guard at the flagpole all night.
Oh, no.
And they'd go tell him to go and get a, have him to go and get a sky stretcher, or anything was impossible, you know. They'd send him up to the tool shed to have this, to check this out. You'd have to sign your name and so on and so forth and what you got. And they'd pull pranks on them like that, send them up after things that didn't even exist, just to have fun.
Was there much interaction among the different camps at Mammoth Cave, like say 2 and 3 or 1 and 2 or?
Well, when I was at number 2, that was when I done the fire tower, mostly fire tower, fire guard work. In my off days, I'd go to Mammoth Cave and go in with my buddies and just walk around with him, staying there on the off days, if it was through the week. And sometimes you'd have to fire guard over the weekend, you know. And you had a map up on the fire, up on the tower, and when a fire would be spotted, and you had a circular on that with figures on it, and then you had a pointer in the center of that you could turn, and they would call you when a fire was spotted. Another one of the guards had turned it in, and then they'd call you. And the first one called it in would give his direction. And then you'd see if you could spot the fire, and you'd give your direction. And on this map, when they give the direction, these pointers would cross right where the fire was. Mm-hmm. And they could get a load of men in a few minutes and go and be right at the fire. And I did most of my fire patrol was from number 2, and from that to taking care of the air compressor and the crusher engine and the crusher. I'd have to grease the crusher and the conveyor that carried the rock up to the bin where it'd empty off. And then, as I said a while ago, I was a dynamite man, but actually they called it powder monkey back at that time. You know, you shoot the rock off for the, and you had to take what they call them, nipping hammers, small hammers, and burst these rocks small, then pick them up by hand and load them in a truck. And this truck then, with dump truck, it would haul them up to the crusher and dump them, and they'd be crushed. And we'd use the rock and the lime to build roads, keep the roads up.
Let me go ahead and turn the tape over. The second side of the tape of my interview with Mr. Georgie Childress. So, in general, would you say that different camps pretty much kept themselves, or occasionally they'd run into guys from the other ones, or?
Occasionally they would, but most time they'd stay to themselves. If they went in town, they would stay together mostly. Mm-hmm. And occasionally, well, they would mix and get into a brawl or something, and when they did, well, each camp would take up for the other, you know, take up for its own.
Yeah.
Now, out in Utah, we were 6 miles from the nearest little town, a little town called Henryville. The next one was about 3 miles, was Cannonville. Then about 3 or 4 miles from that was another town called Tropic. Well, every week on Friday night, each one of these little towns would have a dance. They'd have some string music and have a dance. And I never did try to dance any, but I'd go with these, I'd go just get away from camp. These boys would get drunk. And sometimes they'd come in their head, somebody just beat them off, you know. But I never did drink any, and I never did get in no fights. But some of the boys would, and I hate to see them come in the shape they were in. One night, one evening in particular, me and a boy by the name of Crow were digging telephone post holes through town in Henryville, and we went in this little store to get us something to drink, and we decided we'd buy us a pocket knife. So he and I bought us a pocket knife apiece, and that was on Friday, and that night was, and while we were there, this one of the local men come in, he saw us buy these knives. And they were afraid of a knife out there. Them residents out there in Utah, they was afraid of a knife as I would be a snake. So they saw us buy these knives, and that night when we went to, the trucks got us and took us all down to the dance, and I was just sitting in there watching them. And I looked out the window, and I don't know how many heads I saw looking into the window. They saw us buy those knives that day, and they were afraid it was going to
be trouble.
Afraid we was going to cut them, you know. But we didn't buy it for that purpose, us too, but now they were some mean ones that was with us. They'd been in the penitentiary, and they were mean. They'd get drunk, and Lord help, they'd turn your beds over overnight. It is mean.
And at Mammoth Cave, did they have any dances like that?
Yep, they did. They'd go to Bowling Green. I never did go to one of them at Mammoth Cave, but they did have them. They had a building called the Hoopie House. It was just under the hill from Mammoth Cave toward the Colored Camp, which was number one. And I went down there to see a show one night, but I never did go to none of the dances. They'd go to Bowling Green and get truckloads of women in Glasgow and bring them in there for these boys to dance with. I was too backward, I never would go, and I never would go to a dance or anything. I'd always come home. But I did go down and see a show one night, and I was at the Hoopie House, and I believe I was down there at the dedication when they dedicated.
Well, how did the white people in the area feel about the presence of blacks in a camp nearby?
Well, we didn't mix.
Mm-hmm.
I never had anything any time against the colored, but We didn't work together. They worked to themselves and we worked to ourselves. Only time that I was with them were when I'd taken care of the rock crusher and the air compressor, which was run by number two camp after I transferred over there. And the colored men did the sledgehammer work, loading the trucks and the labor work. And I was there to see that the air compressor was kept going and the rock crusher was kept gasoline and oil changed in the motor, gasoline in for it to run, and then grease the conveyors that move the rock out. And when I wasn't doing anything else, when a truck pulled in, all you had to do go down and take a hold of a big lever and open up the slide and let the truck stand there and load with rock, you know, crushed rock, and they'd take it out and spread it on the road. Come back. If I wasn't busy, I would do that during my spare time. But I was usually busy most of the time when I had all that to do.
Were there any instances of racial tension in the area that you remember?
Not as I recall at all.
How did the local residents feel about the CCC being in the area?
Well, as far as I know, they at first, it's kind of like the Job Corps moving in a community. They didn't like, the main thing they didn't like was the government buying their land and for them having to move out. And some of the, they'd buy all around certain person and leave him sitting in the center, and he'd still be there. Of course, they'd have to go to court and condemn it and take court action, and then he'd have to sell. And some of the residents at that time were so upset, as I told you a while ago, about setting these fires. They would they'd ride mules across these hollers, and they'd set a fire on top of one hill and take off and go all the way across for a mile or so and set another one and just keep going. So you'd get one put out and there'd be another to burn in, and you'd get it put out and be another to burn in. And sometimes it'd keep you on the go. And that was one way they had of getting, trying to get even with Uncle Sam for buying and putting them out of there.
So it wasn't so much the CCC specifically they were upset with, it was more the government.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Was there much interaction with the local residents in the CCC?
Well, now they were at places, they, you know, they thought they were troublemakers a whole lot, even in town, like Cave City and Brownsville and different places. They'd watch you when you went in town. They could pretty well tell when somebody's trying to make trouble. But it was kind of just more so of a thing like the Job Corps is today. People moving in unaware and not knowing who they were. They thought we were just outcast or cast-offs, I guess. But there was lots of good boys in there with me because I was in with lots of local boys.
Mm-hmm. Did many of the men date local girls?
Yes. And some of the boys that come out of other states married the local girls.
Well, how successful do you think the CCC was in relieving the effects of the Depression?
I don't know if it did anything much to relieve the Depression. It was just, it bound to help some, of course. But I would send $25 home, or the government would send $25 of my money home, and that would help my dad and mom to buy food and clothing for the other children. It helped. Sure, it was a great help. But what was so heartbreaking was, I didn't realize it at the time, and my mother, of course, like I told you in the beginning, she cried when I left home. And she thought I'd never be back, maybe, and I'd never been away from home like that before, and she hadn't experienced nothing like that, and it was heartbreaking to her. And, of course, when I come home, she's more than glad to see me. Of course, all of them dead, all of them, for that matter. And occasionally, they wouldn't have to spend all my money, and I'd get $5 or $10, and that was a pocket full of money. But when I was in Utah, when we got paid in silver.
Mm.
We got paid $5, five silver dollars. You might get once in a while, you might get one paper dollar, but most of it is just big silver dollars.
Do you think the CCC helped the economy of the local area?
Yeah, sure. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. It had to. It helped people pay their store accounts, in other words. Sometime the merchant would carry a family for a year, you know, depend on the tobacco crop or so on and so forth. And of course, after a few years, when things begin to pick up, they got a little more out of their crops, and then come along when I remember going with my dad to sign up on during the Depression to raise just so much tobacco. You'd be allotted so much, and that's when the price started going up, instead of everybody just raising all they could raise when they couldn't sell it. And when you could just raise so much, the price started up. But no doubt, there's no question in my mind. I was young at that time, and I didn't realize what the economy was, or I just know we was in hard times, and I mean sure enough hard times. But people survived, and that was all they had, and they didn't look forward to nothing else, and we were, what we had to eat, mostly we raised it. And that's all you had. You didn't look for anything else. If something different come in to eat, or most time for years there, we didn't have any biscuit for breakfast. I don't guess I was the only one either. There's lots of families in that shape during that time. A pan of biscuits would have looked like gold sitting on the table to us children. I remember when my mother would when peaches would get ripe, and she'd get enough to buy enough sugar to make a big peach cobbler. Oh, we'd eat like pigs.
Well, in general, what do you consider to be the greatest contribution of the CCC?
I guess the greatest contribution I believe it kept young men from moonshining, and no doubt kept a lot of them from having trouble with other people because they were away. There was lots of troublemakers that they picked up in the community, and they shipped them off, and they were somewhere else making trouble, I guess, but it relieved the community to see somebody that was always a troublemaker or getting into trouble. That was one of the contributions, I would say, and it's a great contribution too, to help for even a teenage boy. Didn't have no way of making no money back then. $5, he had $5. And $5 would buy something back at that time. And you could go and spend a whole lot and not spend it all during that time. It was a great help, bound to be. But like I said, I was young and I didn't realize all that was going on, but I can look back now and see. It was a great help. It helped me, and it helped my parents, yes.
Do you think the CCC made a difference in the military during World War II?
No, I doubt that very much, because we didn't have any military training in there. All the training you had in there toward anything was, at a certain time, it'd be retreat. You'd get out, and when the bugle blowed, you'd go and stand at attention when the flag was going up or coming down. And that's only, and even march back to your barracks. And that's the only thing as far as military that we had in the CCC camp. I wouldn't think it contributed anything towards the military, no. We had Army officers most of the time, was our officers, they were from the Army. Mm-hmm. But we didn't contribute. I would say no.
Were there any problems that you could see in the CCC, or, you know, in general as a program, or specifically at Mammoth Cave?
Yes, occasionally. One or two times, and I know one time in particular, we wasn't getting enough to eat. And we went on strike one morning. Didn't have enough to eat for breakfast hardly. And we got tired of it. And when they blowed the whistle for everybody to fall out, we just stayed in the barracks. And they assured us they would come to find out what the problem was. And they assured us that from then on we would get more to eat. And what you would get a lot of times would be mash spuds, and then they'd make spud patties, fry them. You know, take mashed potatoes and make patties out of them, fry it for breakfast. And then you'd get a half a pint of milk for breakfast and a banana sometimes. And sometimes you wouldn't get no banana. And you would take this half a pint of milk, and we had what we ate out of was our mess kits, aluminum tray with a handle on it that you could fasten on your belt and carry with you, and the cup was the same way. And you ate out of this mess kit and you washed it yourself and carried it back to your barracks. And some mornings, lots of mornings, I'd take light bread and tear it up in small pieces, put sugar over that, and pour my milk over it. That was my cereal. That was my dessert for breakfast. And a lot of times that's all you had, except if you had a banana. And occasionally you might get a small box of corn flakes or grape nut flakes. And when I was out in Utah, the milk you got was canned milk, pet milk. Mm-hmm. And I believe you take one little can of pet milk and pour it in a gallon jug and then fill it with water and make a gallon of milk out of it. Mm-hmm. And that was our milk there, but when we was over here at CCC camp, the milk all came in glass bottles at that time with a paper top. Mm-hmm. And didn't have no we had electricity, but it didn't have no deep freezes or anything, and they had ice boxes, and the ice truck would come every day and deliver ice for the meat where they kept the meat in store, in other words.
Mm-hmm. Were there any other problems in the camp that you can remember?
No, that was the biggest problem that I can remember. I got along with everybody good.
What did you do after you left?
I come home to the farm and bought a little piece of land, about 43 acres, and it was all in woods. And I started work, and I cleared it up and built a little house and married. And then in 1940, in November, I believe it was, but in 1940, I put out 2 acres of tobacco. I didn't have no allotment, and it cost me so much money to sell that tobacco in order to get an allotment. And I believe the next year I got 1/10 of allotment. And then Congress passed a law, and a year or so after that, everybody who didn't have an acre would get an acre. But during that time, I decided I would go and find me a job. And I left home, went to Louisville. And from Louisville, I went to Charleston, Indiana to work at the powder plant. I worked during the bigger part of World War II. And I remember the morning I was on the midnight shift. I was on the 3 to 12 shift, in other words, 4 to 12, second shift, and I was in the bed, hadn't gotten up on Sunday morning, when one of the friends came by and told me to get up. We was at war. Pearl Harbor had been bombed. And I never did have to go to the service. I had a family, and I passed my examination, was waiting, and they passed the law. Anybody was 26. And by a certain time didn't have to go, and that exempted me. I thought I was gone a time or two. That's the only thing kept me out.
And when did you move back in this area?
I guess in 1948, I guess.
You've been here ever since?
Uh-huh. In this same, well, right in this community. I have a farm. I've bought 3 farms, and they're all joined. They all connect together. And we've been living here, and we built this home about 18, 20 years ago. We've been living here this time. But it's about 3/4 mile from where I first built. Mm-hmm. And this is more convenient over here than it was over there where the other place.
Is there anything else you'd like to tell me about your experience with the CCC?
Well, really, I don't, on the last, before I was discharged, as we was working and some of the other men had to leave, it was older, and I went to work one morning with a detail, and Mr. Cox, Perry Cox, he was a local man, he was a foreman, and he told me I was going to be promoted to assistant leader, and that's $36 a month, you know. And then the leader, he got $45. and you had a leader to each barracks, an assistant leader. So I'd made an assistant leader for a month and a half or so before I discharged. And you didn't have to do any work at that. When you were assistant leader, you just helped other men, show them what to do. But I hated to leave. I was all the buddies I got acquainted with, and we all had good times. But when I had to go, I just moved out, and then I worked on the farm for some of the neighbors and farmed some myself until I went and got a public job.
Do you still keep in touch with some of the guys you met in the CCC?
Some of them I do, yes. I got in touch with one. I saw one at the funeral home here some time ago, and he didn't know me. Curtis Mills. And I asked someone, I said, "Is that Curtis Mills?" I said, "Yes." And I went and spoke to him, and he said, "Well, who are you?" Over the years, you forget. But there was some resemblance about him that I remembered, and I'm almost sure that's who it was. Mm-hmm. And we had a good long talk about time we'd spent together. And there's so many of the others. Some of them went off to the war and got killed, you know. I'd hear about it. And some of them have died of natural causes. And some of them never got to see that I was ready enough to see. And this CCC camp, CCC, Civilian Conservation Corps, the members, they have a get-together, or have had the last two or three years, but I've never gotten to go to one. Maybe I will sometime, and I could see some of the boys that I was with. I believe it would be something worthwhile to visit and talk with them. Mm-hmm.
Well, thank you very much.
It's been a pleasure.